I've done jokes about my dad dying of COVID, and I used to have like a whole chunk about this in my solo show. And at least a couple of times, yeah, people would come up to me and be like, "Did your dad really die?" And for me, it's like, why the, what kind of monster would I be?
And scene.
Nice.
Welcome to the Comedy Hole Podcast. This is Jordan Thomas Gray at Jordan Thomas Gray, joined by Ariel Bielski.
Hi.
And we have a special guest as usual. Today it is Badr Laffer.
Hello.
Hey, Badr. Hello. Hey, Badr.
He is an adult man, despite what you were hearing right now. And he is a comedian.
Yes.
And he hosts shows. He's been around the Warsaw scene for quite a long time. How long have you been doing comedy?
Since 2019, so around 40 years.
All right.
But yeah, but today we're not going to interview Badr because we've had enough of interviewing people. Yeah.
What's to know, really?
Yeah.
Where are you from, though?
Nothing so special. I'm from Syria. That's the only special thing I have.
Okay. Mm.
That's the only unique power.
Yeah, but what we were going to do...
Or I was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah. This is my most powerful thing. And you're like, we don't care.
It's not about you today, Bobby.
It's not.
No, we were...
This is nothing.
Me and Jordan were just going to record about truth in comedy and how truthful it is, because we were having a little, like, not argument, but discussion or something, or opinion sharing. And then I realized that you probably have tons of ideas about this too, because of the stuff that you say.
Yes.
Because basically, it's just like, Jordan was like, how true do you think your jokes have to be? And what's your theory on it?
My theory is 80% true. 80% true, 80% of the time. And this is for stories. I think jokes that are one-liners, truth doesn't have much to do with it. I think the premise has to be true, but that's just sort of a structural thing. Of if you say a premise like, isn't it crazy how all women are left-handed, then people are just like, what the fuck are you talking about, right? So premises have to be true just for a joke to work. But I think stories, they either have to be so fantastical that it's obviously not true, or grounded in enough truth that the audience isn't rejecting it. Because if the audience thinks that you're lying to them, then they can push back on you. If something is obviously not true and everyone's in on it not being true, that's fine. But for me, I try to tell stories that are mostly true. But if there's a throwaway detail that isn't true, that's funny, I'll add that. No problem. And people talk about stories being emotionally true. You know, comedic stories.
What?
Whatever that means.
Emotionally true?
I don't know what that means.
Emotionally true
means... All emotions are true, isn't it? Or all emotions are fake?
I think maybe it more means true for you. You know, like this is some sort of reflection of your actual experience. Like, if you've never been addicted to a drug, then you shouldn't tell a story about having a drug addiction. But if you've never been addicted to heroin, maybe you were addicted to, like, crack. Maybe it's okay to sub in heroin because the core, the gist, the emotional truth of the story is true. I think that's what that means.
It's kind of like punching down and up, this kind of like leans.
Maybe.
Because it's okay, let's say aside from the heroin and the addiction and everything, let's say you're, you know, like what you're talking about is someone who's like, this is not my reality, this is someone else's reality. And I cannot make fun of their reality because it's not mine.
Right. You can't steal trauma, I think is a big thing.
Yeah, but like, are you talking about like specifically trauma?
I think trauma is the most impactful one. So maybe we can start by doing an obvious case. So there was this comedian, Steve Renazzini. He was on the show The League. He was all over US TV because he was like a spokesman for Buffalo Wild Wings. And he had a story, I think he mostly did this in interviews, maybe not even on stage, about how he was there at 9/11 and he was in one of the towers and he escaped.
Ooh.
And then it came out later, he admitted to it that that wasn't true at all. He was in New Jersey.
Doesn't that not, that's not comedy. That's him telling, that's like
I don't
truth
know if
in
he,
life.
I don't
never
know if
did
it on stage or not. He might have, but he also did it in interviews. And interviews comedy interviews are a kind of performance.
But it is a.
I'm saying this is an obvious case of a thing that you should not do.
Yeah, right? It also is a bad example of comedy because it's not. It literally was how the story goes is he was in LA and trying to be cool, and then he mentioned something like that, and he was like, "Why did I fucking lie about that?" And then people heard about it, and then they asked him on interviews, and he was like, "Yes." And then he had to go on with the lie that was not true. But that's not on stage.
I'm just using that as interviews. I don't know why you're rejecting it so much. It's a famous comedian who told a huge lie.
I think he told
and you shouldn't do that. I think. Can you think of an example of similar lie on stage?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just shouldn't lie, because you started with 80%,
80%
and 20% not true.
Yeah,
on stage. But that's a different rule system than in real life. In real life, I don't think you should say you did, like, you were in line 11.
Well,
when you weren't.
It's not binary. It's not real life or stage. If you're in an interview on Howard Stern, or if you're on the We Might Be Drunk podcast, you're in a sense on stage. You are performing in that moment. We are kind of performing right now.
Yeah, but here I will tell 100% true unless I'm completely joking, obviously.
Yeah, but there's
you never embellish stories in real life.
Not so much. The only thing I would embellish is, let's say there's a detail that's just boring and then I just skip it. And so let's say Badr called me and told me something and then something crazy happened. I might just say that, oh, I went there because why did I have to bring Badr into it? Because it was just a useless piece of information or whatever. And so I wouldn't consider this a podcast the same way I would consider on stage, because on stage, my theory is nothing has to be true. You don't have to be.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't believe you have to, even in your stories, it could be completely made up and people can ask, oh, was that true? And you could be like, maybe, I don't
know. Suppose you told that story on stage about being a 9/11.
Then that would be completely different.
Do you think that's okay?
I mean, it's a crazy thing to lie about specifically.
But you think if it's on stage, it would be okay to do that? Is that your position?
I would say it's an extreme example. It's like saying, oh, I was at war. You know, I went to the front lines of a war, and you say that on stage, and then you come off stage, and if someone asks you, you say, no, I was lying about that. That's a complete joke. Well, then that's fine. It's a little strange thing to be lying about, but technically, yeah, I guess I'd be on the side of, I guess you could do that. I wouldn't personally do that, but I think it's at least more okay than being off stage and talking to friends and being like, yeah, I was in the military.
I think if Steve...
Harvey?
Steve Zucchini, Steve Renazzisi,
Renazzisi.
Why is it so hard for me? Steve Renazzisi, if he told the 9/11 story on stage and like put it in a special... I feel like that's potentially worse. I think he could use the defense like, oh, you know, it's stand-up, nothing is real. But if he's presenting it as true and the audience all thinks it's true and it's about some traumatic event that many people have suffered through, if I said on stage that my grandfather was in the Holocaust and died in the Holocaust on stage and used jokes around that, I don't think being on stage is an excuse for that. I think you shouldn't do that. Unless maybe you call out, none of that was true. Stuart Lee has this long story about some other famous person. And at the end of the story, he just says, by the way, none of that's true.
Right, right.
Yeah. But I think you have to do that. I think you can't borrow trauma in this way. But maybe we disagree on that. Even on stage.
To be honest, this is an example of something that I didn't think about, and it isn't such an extreme example, but I had it before we walked in here. I was like, nothing really needs to be true on stage.
Yeah.
As long as it's funny and you're making people laugh. Now, this opinion might change thinking about what you're saying, because it is some extreme stuff, and going to war and stealing valor on stage. I mean, that's still... like, people do have to know that that's a lie, but I'm sure there is a joke structure that could be made where you say you're in the military and you never were, and you figure out a way to make people understand something, and then you also tell them it's not true, I guess.
I've seen this exact thing. So in New York, I was in an open mic, and a comedian said, I served in Iraq. And he looked like that could be true. And he said, at a rainforest cafe. And that's that's totally different. I think also if you remove the war, Holocaust, 9/11, if you just do it about something benign, like it's totally fine to say that you went to the store today. Comedians all the time say, yesterday, my friend, or just yesterday this happened, and that's almost never true.
Yeah.
And that we all agree that's okay. So I think what this gets down to is the problematic thing is stealing valor or taking some horrible event and almost benefiting from it in a way that feels dishonest if later it's explained to people that it's not actually true. If they understand it's not true, totally fine. If that's part of the structure especially, that's totally okay. And that's most of what jokes are.
I mean, a small example of that that I did yesterday was saying I have diarrhea, which I didn't have. It's just for the joke.
Okay, Ariel.
And I don't have it. But whatever, the joke is just about spelling diarrhea, and it's much easier to get diarrhea than to spell diarrhea. But then at the end, they understood that and whatever. And then I was getting out of the set, and I was like, all right, well, I got to go. I have diarrhea. I mean, that's just a joke and it's ha ha ha, whatever, but it's not true. Diarrhea could be trauma. People die from diarrhea. So, you know. It's,
why would anyone even talk about trauma? I think the thing about trauma is, first of all, I do agree that when you get on stage, nothing need to be true. You can be impersonating someone that you're actually not. For the longest time, I think Dave Chappelle, no one knew that he's actually from like a, he had a good kind of like, okay, he wasn't born into poverty or whatever. Mm-hmm. People thought that he was from like the projects, mm-hmm. even though he wasn't the projects. He was like in a good neighborhood, but he was like the poorest, let's say, in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And that like he said his parents did so good in life to be around like rich white people, but they were their poorest, let's say, around them.
We are not poor. We are broke.
We are broke. Yes, exactly. That's what he said. He's like, his father told him like, poor is
a mindset.
A mindset. Exactly. But talking about like the truth, I don't think you need to be completely true on stage. However, when you're true or when you're honest, you're relating to a certain group of people. So let's say with the 9/11 or let's say the World War, you're relating to these people. And in some way, you're not only exploiting their sense of humor, but you're also exploiting their trauma where now...
you joined the group?
You're exploiting something that you shouldn't be exploiting. This kind of, this power of like, we are the survivors, we are this group of people who came from this kind of like historic event. We have actually suffered and we have a voice where if someone else comes in where he didn't take part all,
sure,
is sharing that voice, but that voice is not true.
Right.
So if he says something, let's say, wrong, then they will point fingers. Let's say the other group of people will point fingers like, okay, now look at him. He's saying it's not that bad. He's making fun of it. Meanwhile, the reality of the people, they're like, no, we are suffering.
Yeah.
And whatever that he's doing is not actually true. He never lived our life.
And also, even like if he presents it as true, the person on stage presents it as true, and then people find out it is all made up, then the next time a person who was actually part of that group or in that situation, it's like Boy Who Cried Wolf. They'll be like, ah, he's talking about, you know, refugees again. And remember that guy who lied about it? Fuck that guy. And fuck this guy. Maybe this guy's lying too. And it's kind of waters down the whole subject, maybe. Mm. By being pretending to be part of it.
And the group as well as will push him away.
Yeah.
Be like, he's not one of us. He's not even funny. Like it happens with me being like saying about these Arab jokes and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I feel I am most hated by the Arab community.
Oh.
Like they don't accept me. Every single Arab I showed him like
is
my
it the
videos.
Mustache?
What? it's just talking about like the, people will say like, this is not true. Like none of us, it's only a stereotype. And I'm like, yes, I know it's a stereotype. That's why people don't know anything about Arabs other than like what, four wives, Islam, and that's it. Like, and Iraq and Saddam Hussein. Like that's all that they know. But I'm coming in, I'm like playing on that stereotypical string. But people see like, no, that's not true. That's not the reality. We're just like human beings like everyone else. I'm like, yes, but they don't know that. And that's not interesting. That's boring. Like what? You go to your job and you come back. You're just like everyone else. Everyone knows that.
Yeah. And also if every single one of your jokes was about blowing shit up or whatever,
yeah,
then it would be a little bit like, all right, this guy's always doing blowing up jokes. But yeah, I mean, you have a bunch of different jokes. But I was even talking to someone yesterday. It was a guy I met after the show. We were sitting next to this group and they were all from India. And they were talking about how the stereotypes, and he said actually not in Poland, but just around the world, about India being like not a developed country and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, we just go to work and whatever. And that's exactly what I said. I was like, well, if Indian people are coming out and talking to someone new, then the most extreme thing of like a cow walking in front of traffic and everyone stops and that kind of stuff is more interesting than I just went to the my work in a building. Like that's, there's nothing interesting about that. So why would anyone tell a story about that? They're more likely going to tell the crazier parts of their country anyways.
Yeah. That kind of forced me as well as the thing where let's say I'm Arab here. I am, not let's say, but I am actually Arab.
Let's say
you're a straight guy.
Yeah, let's say I'm a straight guy.
It's right? A norm.
Let's say I'm the handsomest man alive, right?
Okay.
Okay, but I'm on stage and I do these Arab jokes. And because there's like the stereotype of like, I don't have to repeat the stereotype multiple times, I need to focus on something true so that people would at least see me as like, yeah, he's doing the bombing jokes, but and that's all like, let's brush it away, but there's actually truth in that, so we can trust him. Mm-hmm. So truth helps the audience and the comedian build trust. So whatever story you're going to tell, even if it's a fake story, they will believe in the beginning, like, haha, it's a real story. And then you come in with the most sketchiest punchlines of the story and be like, aha, now that's extra funny because I thought it was real, but then it turns out that it's not true at all.
It's clearly not true. I get it now. Yeah.
So it spice it up, I think.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good point that it is the truth is trust. Even when I make fun of someone on... Like I remember I was making fun of this guy. He had a Canadian's hat on. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, where are you from? And dude, you're from Canada? And he was like, no, I'm not. And I don't know. I was just making fun of him for being a fake Canadian. Mm. But then I really had no hate towards him. It was, I don't give a shit if you're wearing a Canadian's hat. And it was very nice. And I was just insulting him. But he knew I was good natured. He was like very like laughing and the crowd was laughing and they were enjoying the fact that I'm doing this, but they knew the truth of it. They knew I wasn't actually pissed off at him for wearing a Canadian's hat. I think I made fun of it in that way. Whereas if I was actually pissed off, people would see it and they wouldn't enjoy it as much. No. So like truth, I think, yeah, it's just honesty. They see honesty in the comedian and then...
Authenticity.
Yeah, authenticity. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then they're on that person's side, whether it be bad or good.
Yeah.
Because if that person is authentically pissed off, people will be like, oh shit, this comedian's actually pissed off. What the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
You know, people see the truth anyways, you know?
Do you have any stories you tell that maybe seem like they could be true but are totally made up?
Yeah, one of the ones you have about falcons.
No, but that's like 99% true.
But that's what I mean. Maybe then you were asking, or this is a different.
He's asking
subject.
Like a story that was false.
Mm-hmm. False.
100% false, but
passably true. So not clear, not fantasy. Like doesn't read as untrue. It reads as true, but isn't true.
But it's completely made up.
I don't think many comedians have those.
I had tons of those where it's like I thought of that in that way of doing comedy as a skit. Like, if you see a sketch comedy show, I mean, it could be based off something that was funny in real life, but you embellish on it and it's a completely made up scenario. In the story, it was you and another dude, mm-hmm. but you make it in the sketch two girls and whatever. And there's a dog there because of the joke about it or whatever.
Yeah.
It's completely made up. And I have told stories that are absolutely 100% made up.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
I did it early on, like very early on, where I didn't know what to write. I just thought of funny sketches.
Yeah.
And I just wrote it down and I performed it. And it kind of did well. But at some point, I'm like, I cannot. There's so much in this. I can make everything up. And it felt so overwhelming where I'm like, let me take a step back. Maybe right now I can do it. Like with my experience of writing, I can just make an entire story up. But ever since I took a step back to be like, okay, this is too overwhelming of information to put in here. This is too funny. And when it's too funny in my head, I get on stage and it's not funny at all. and that's very disappointing where I'm like, okay, maybe I need some truth. So maybe let's start with who I am. Where did I come from? What is my story? What made me this interesting, let's say, on stage? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I did it and it kind of did work. But I think because of lack of experience at that time, it didn't work 100%.
I think my problems early on were I would do stories that were true, just 100% true, and the audience didn't believe them. And because they weren't like fantastical, like they were possible, they just weren't working at all. And then people afterward, they wouldn't even ask me if it was true. They would just be like, how do you come up with like such weird...
complete opposite.
They just thought it was 100% false.
Yeah.
Where I was trying to do stuff as 100% true.
Jeez.
And that's why I've landed on, 80% true 80% of the time. Because they're like recently... My mom listens to this.
Yeah.
This is fine. Sorry,
Hello,
Mom.
Jordan's mom.
she got a text from my brother... The worst brother. I wouldn't say his name, but if you're in my family, the worst brother. And it was an image, and she couldn't tell what the image was at first. And then she realized it was a man's right hand, a penis, and a vagina. And it was like kind of turned upside down. So it was like a sex type photo.
Okay.
And then he just said, fuck. Sorry, Mom. But the funny thing to me about this is that he couldn't play it off as not his photo because, for one, my brother has a... Oh, I just said his name. My brother has a tattoo of a star on his right hand.
Yeah.
That's one thing. Also, he only has four fingers on his right hand.
That's very...
So this is, of all the people in the world,
yes.
This has to be Josh's sex photo. And then that same day... He works at a company that fixes things, basically, is the gist of it.
Okay.
And my mom's a nurse. And his company, he had to do a job in my mom's office.
Mm.
Just hours later, he was coming in and after having sent this photo, and my mom was just like, everyone, this is my son, Josh. And just embarrassing. He was so uncomfortable and just embarrassing the shit out of him. But like, that's such an unlikely set of events. Well, I don't think it's quite funny enough to do on stage. But also, like, people aren't going to believe... that he came to her office on the same day. I just feel like that's too improbable and not fantastical enough.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yes.
But I mean, you said it on stage and just people didn't believe it.
This one actually worked, the text thing.
Mm.
What I did with the text was I said that it happened to me, that he sent me that photo. And then what I think the only thing that worked about it was that he's got a tattoo and four fingers and then he can't be like, I've been hacked.
Because on the other side, that detail sounds like you didn't make it up. Oh,
yeah.
you're also presenting it to us as this is a true story anyways.
And I say it happened to me. And then what I did after was like, the kicker is that didn't actually happen to me. That happened to my mom. And that kind of got a reaction, but like not enough to do the whole like... This was true, but not in the way I presented it thing, which is what I was trying to do. I was just testing it out. Because I think telling a story and then making it false in such a way that later on you can flip it and be like, I lied about that. It's actually like this and this is much worse. I think that can work. I'm still.
But what does it matter if it's like what the audience thinks it's true or not? Like they'll, I've had it both things. Even yesterday, just I say something and then someone asks, oh, is that actually true? And I was like, no, that's not true. And vice versa. I asked you about the Falcons. I was like, did you actually have Falcons? And you were like, yeah, absolutely. And I thought it was completely made up. And only after the second joke about Falcons that I heard recently, I was like, wait a minute, you must have had Falcons because it's just a completely different story about these goddamn Falcons. There's, that has to be true. But either way, it doesn't matter. I watched a joke of yours of the Falcons thinking it's completely made up and it was funny. Mm-hmm. And then the second time thinking, oh shit, it's true. And it still was funny.
It's still funny, yeah.
So what does it matter my opinion about if what's true or not for the comedian?
It's all about how the audience feels about it. Because you can do a story where people are relating to it. You know, they're empathizing. And that's one way to tell a story. And the other way of telling a story is this is play. This is fun. We're all having fun. This, I'm presenting to you this crazy thing. And this is not about empathizing and identifying with each other. And I think if you get those things flipped and the audience thinks that you are trying to get them to empathize with you, but they suspect this is actually just play, I think that creates tension in the audience. And I think that's when things bomb. The most.
Wait, sorry.
For me, anyway.
I zoned out. Say that again.
Okay. All right.
Why is it?
I'll put it in words you can understand. All right.
Jokey. Go.
Ha ha. Ha ha. Man, go joke. Audience, go. No.
No. Just when you said about bombing the way to bomb.
When you create tension in an audience and you don't release it. That's when bombing happens. And I think the tension that gets created that's relevant to truth in stand-up is when the audience thinks that you're trying to get them to believe something and empathize with you, but they think that you're actually making it up. That creates an internal tension so that they are not having a good time and they're like conflicted about it and like... You know, they're not able to get the laughs out because of this tension. If it's obviously fantasy, perfect. If it does seem actually genuine and authentic and really true, perfect. But when you're those things become, and when you're in the middle is when things don't work. Story-wise.
I think that goes from comedian to comedian a lot. Though.
Yeah.
It depends on them because I find when I'm being authentic, then... people see that very clearly. And for some comedians, when you're being authentic, people don't see if you're being authentic or not. They don't know if it's true or not. Mm-hmm. So some people have an easier time telling a genuinely crazy story that sounds made up, but if it's not, people do see it on their face. Like I've heard that about myself where it's like, people like I can't hold in if I'm pissed off at someone because it just shows on my face.
Yeah.
And some people could just be like, oh, great. And really could stab you behind your back because they put on a good fake face. So it all depends on the comedian, I think, how much you can get away with.
Yeah.
Some people can get away with like really roasting an audience member and everyone loves it. And some person could say the same words and just sounds mean. And you're like, whoa, what the fuck? And it's the kind of what, how come that one comedian can do it and the other one can't?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like I'm not a good liar. I'm pretty transparent. Then I don't understand why sometimes when I'm telling a totally true story, people think it's not real. And then that tension is created.
Yeah, because I haven't experienced that from myself when you're saying.
Because I have that children's theater story where I go on a second date that's to someone's theater performance. And then it turns out it's a show for children in Ukrainian and it's 200 kids in the audience and just me. And I literally have a lollipop because that's what I could buy at concessions that I was going to give as a gift. And 100% true. And then after that, it worked. The story worked. But then after that show, someone came up to me and this is what I'm saying about it. He was like, how'd you come up with that crazy story? And it had happened that day. And I pulled out the ticket that was like all exactly as described. It was also a children's show about the Ukrainian war and all the kids were refugees.
Yes.
And I didn't know any of that. And I was clueless about it. And so afterwards, she was like, what did you think? And I was like, I thought it was really funny. I don't know why people weren't laughing.
But see that right there, I remember watching that story and I was like, oh, that's very funny. And I assumed it was true, mm-hmm. but that guy assumed it wasn't.
Yeah.
What does it matter to, if everyone's laughing, it kind of doesn't matter if I think it's true or not, or if that guy, sure. if you never met him afterwards, that's when you wouldn't have known.
That's when, I don't think that matters if it worked. But I used to work at this company, I've talked about it on the podcast, like a women's audio pornography and masturbation tutorial company, like to help women orgasm is the company. And I tried to do bits about that on stage and not a single person was believing that this was actually my job. And so I just couldn't do it because I couldn't find a way, one, to make it believable. And if I just mentioned it kind of casually, people just, oh, this is just a dude bullshitting. I do have it working. I think it's a bit cheap, but basically if the room is big enough, I mentioned that was my job. And then I say that the men in the room are thinking that's not true. And then people laugh. And the women in the room are thinking, what is the name of this app? And then they laugh at that. And that works. A comedian friend told me that was kind of a shitty mid joke. I don't know.
Yeah, I think like that joke aside, but I think also that specific subject matter, you're confusing truth with the strength of the joke or with the uncomfort of the audience. People in the room, maybe, because guys could be like, oh, this guy's just saying these jokes to brag or something like that.
Yeah, to flex off. Have
that people reaction. Would tell me after. I asked a few people, like, and they were like, of course, that's not true.
Majority of people won't give their opinion.
Your joke is that you help women orgasm.
I had some jokes around that. That I worked at a company.
That is intimidating to some men.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because he's going to be with his girl. And there's a lot of men who's in relationships with women who cannot just make them orgasm.
That wasn't literally my day-to-day job.
American dude who get on stage, so looks so successful, looks handsome, and you can make women come. What?
To be clear, it wasn't...
get the fuck out of here, do it.
To be clear, it wasn't a service job. You know, I was marketing, but yeah.
I
couldn't find the clitoris, so they fired me. And that sort of disarms, I think, that impression a bit.
Right, right. But okay. You never know. That's the thing about I know you're saying that people come up to you. Majority of people won't, just like the internet.
Sure.
Most people will just say, oh, thank you, and that's it. They won't give their full opinion to you anyways.
But I think if somebody gives you an opinion, you can infer a lot.
You can, but it's not the majority opinion. It's one person's still opinion.
Sure.
Because, I mean, it's like the internet. They'll be like, fuck this guy sucks. Or like, mm-hmm. I love this guy. Most people might even just skip the video or be like, oh, that was good. I didn't like that much. But they don't have as strong of an opinion of the person who's commenting. So maybe it's different in a show. But like, I don't think it's always about truth. Like how true that story is. I think you're right. There could be some guys being super intimidated mm-hmm. by it. Some people who don't believe it. Some people who believe it and are just like... prudes. Yeah, don't want to hear about sex. You know, there's lots of mm-hmm. different opinions based off that. And it's not always about how true that is.
I'm sure it isn't always, but I think it's a good example of people actively told me they didn't believe that.
Right.
And I think if you are trying to pass something off as true, if people pick up on that on stage, that does create attention and that does torpedo some material.
Mm.
I think that's... I'm not really open to debate on
that. I have a question. Why does it matter for a comedian if his jokes are true or not? Like, why would you bring truth into your jokes to begin with?
My thing about that, actually, my main point, actually, for this whole subject is truthfully much, much less deep. It's just basically remembering your memory about it. When I have a story that's completely made up and I think it's funny, it's written like a skit, which I do a lot less. I think I also did it just at the beginning. Like, I would be like, oh yeah, and this detail would be really funny. And this detail would be really funny. And then I'm going through the story on stage and I'm like, wait, what happened next? Yeah. And I don't remember. Yeah. Yeah, if it's totally true,
I see.
I'm connected to it and I'm like, holy fuck, this just happened. Like,
you're emotionally invested.
I'm emotionally invested in it. Like, I just had a story about, like, I was walking and there... was a parade. It was a protest about, and they were protesting something from 1947, and it was an anti-Ukrainian protest. And so that was all true. And I even had the little paper to read the actual protest thing, but I'm completely emotionally invested in it. And I remember the details. It's not really a story. It's more of like a joke, but I still know exactly what's happening in the joke. Whereas I still have to work it out. I only did it once or twice, but like still my mind is in that world. Whereas if I'm talking about how I climbed Everest and I met a monk and I have to remember exactly how this is a funny joke, I'll be way, okay. I won't be as connected until I do that joke many, many more times and remember those details.
Here's a good example of just, I've done jokes about my dad dying of COVID. And I used to have like a whole chunk about this in my solo show. And at least a couple of times, yeah, people would come up to me and be like, did your dad really die? And for me, it's like, what kind of monster would I be? You know, like to me, I don't want to tell deeply personal stories about trauma that didn't happen. That's insane to me. If someone else does that, like, I'm not sure I would care.
Yeah.
I think it might bother me a little, actually.
If someone said their dad died?
If someone had a whole chunk about their dad dying of COVID and their dad was just alive playing golf in Wisconsin. If it was a killer bit, maybe okay. But like, I don't know. So just something's unsettling to me about that. And something's unsettling to me about an audience member thinking that I would make that up.
I think that audience member needed confirmation. Do you know, like the confirmation bias kind of thing? Where like, I think you're a piece of shit and I need an evidence to prove that you're a piece of shit.
Well, they seem to like the show. They were just sort of asking. I think COVID complicates
because it's such a
everything.
Weird thing. Like why, if I like you, as a person and as a performer, let's say as a performer, because the audience doesn't know you as a person, they only know you as a performer and then maybe later on or before. Mm-hmm. Why would they think that you would make something up of your father that he died specifically?
I think it's more about COVID than my dad dying. Because I think this might have been a person that is like, no one died of COVID. I think it might have been more like that.
Okay.
And then it's like, COVID doesn't kill.
Then it just all got mixed up. Because someone else after a show did be like, you know, COVID's a myth.
Oh my
after
God,
I
dude.
Had done the whole chunk. And I was like, okay, I'll tell my dad. Great. Quit faking, dad.
Like, wake up, sleepyhead.
Yeah, wake up, sleepyhead. It's all okay. COVID's not real. Yeah. The ball's on that guy.
I love how you assumed the person was coming up because they hated Jordan's show.
Yeah, because why else? No, like Jordan specifically, be like, give me a reason.
People only come up to me after the show if they hate it. Yeah, that's 100% of my feedback is negative.
Why would you?
No, 100% of that feedback is from Terry.
Now, where were you saying that you won't budge on your opinion about it? Or it's not up for discussion, Mr. Not up for discussion?
Just that if you're on stage and you're trying to pass something off as true and the audience can detect that, it does create a tension. That just seems obvious to me.
Okay, yeah. Never mind. Yeah. I wanted to argue with you.
Well, sometimes you push on things where it's like you kind of agree, but you disagree with some edge case that we're not really talking about. And you really press the edge case as... my brain just broke.
Yeah. Are you okay? Are you talking about me specifically, or you?
R.L. Bielski. You push the edge case as a refutation of my main point that you actually kind of agree with. Sometimes you do that.
Okay. Was this the case?
Yeah.
Wait, what happened?
Let's move on.
Sorry, I thought
I'm being a real asshole today. I apologize about that.
That's all right. I don't quite.
You're being an asshole?
I think so.
I didn't pick
it's
that up.
It's not too much, but
I'm being a little smug.
You're not looking at me when you. That's why I thought you were talking about the royal.
The camera's
you.
Over here.
You're not looking at the camera. Either camera.
There's a camera over here, guys.
I'm just staring at Botter while telling Ariel. About a personality flaw that he has.
But was I doing that today?
I think so. About for the 9/11 thing, it's like...
But that's an extreme example and I might have to reconsider my opinion.
I might joke about being in the airplane in 9/11.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
I think and people will be like,
because that's clearly fantasy. It's clearly the play space.
There's no way I could be.
Yeah.
I was like 3 years old when that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I wouldn't. I was saying that specifically for those kind of cases, I think I might have to reconsider my opinion about you could make up anything because I don't think I would ever say on stage that I was in the military. I don't think I would. I mean, I can't think of a joke that would make that okay for me. Mm. But my main rule is there's always an exception to a rule. So like, I'm sure there's someone could make up a good thing about that. But probably the best comedy about being in the military would come from someone who's in the military. Mm-hmm. Because they would be most connected to the truth of that situation.
Yeah.
As opposed to a person completely making it up. Now, a skit that you can watch, like some comedy skit, maybe the person who wasn't in the military could make a funny skit about a person being in the military. You don't necessarily have to. But the most connected to the truth will be when you actually lived it. Of course.
Mm.
And so a punchline could be a made-up fact or a detail about the story, but if you lived it, you're connected to it, the audience feels it, you feel it, and you did it.
Do you think these true with kind of like a Kinder Surprise kind of joke, where it's like the middle of it is truth, but it's coated with just all of this fakeness, sweet, sweet, juicy fantasies? What lives longer? Like, does the complete fantasy live longer, or does it, like, the core truth of it lives longer? Like, what about jokes or complete fantasies about a topic and another joke that is kind of true about that topic, but a little bit, there's a bit of fantasy in it? What lives longer, do you think, in people's heads?
I think it's case to case.
Because
I'd have to give an example.
In that case, you're comparing between 100% funny and fantasy and 100% funny, but there is truth in it. So they kind of emotionally attach more into the truth than... because you cannot emotionally attach yourself to something that is not true completely.
Yeah, right.
You kind of be like, that's funny.
That's actually a good point, because actually a lot of... I have memories of comedians that I saw live, and it's not necessarily the funniest thing that I remember. It's the actual fact that they said that I'm like, I learned something.
Yes.
I mean, the fact that you can talk to somebody, and if you learn a fact that you never heard before, that's very memorable. Mm-hmm. So if you hear that on stage, I mean, I remember there was this one guy, and I still remember he did this. He was on stage in front of 8 people in Toronto, and I was just in the audience. It was an open mic. And this guy was talking about how his girlfriend was, he was about to come, and he said, like, oh my God. And she said, what's that? And ruined his orgasm. And something what? Like that. Something like that. Truthfully, but I don't remember what the joke was. It was something about that he didn't come properly.
Yeah.
And he said it, and no one laughed. I thought it was funny, but I was sitting there like with a smile. And then all he did was this. He was just like, and then he dropped his mic as if his dick went limp.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember that kind of dip, limp, like, action of his microphone.
Okay.
That made me laugh. But again, it's not like he was bombing. He was okay. He was great on stage, but it wasn't the best crowd. It was whatever. But I still remember that to this day. And I remember I wanted to go outside and compliment him, but he got on his bike and he biked away. Probably felt like, that wasn't that great.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember that to this day. And this was probably 6-7 years ago, 8 years ago. Why? I don't know.
Maybe you were interested how good he was with the mic.
That, and also how he really felt it was true, I think. So it is, like, maybe the joke wasn't
you
the
connected
greatest,
with
but
him,
I connected
really,
with yeah, what he was like, saying or something. To be honest, there's an
such a human thing. Yeah. Like, what? That I can see that happening.
His disappointment in what his girlfriend did, I think. But like, to be honest, there's an X factor there that I don't know why I connected so, or I remember that so much, as opposed to someone's extremely funny joke.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if, I think truth does live there, but also some weird shit you remember for absolutely no reason you can explain.
I think the brain is constantly trying to forget things. And one of the things that it's kind of hard to forget Is the truth? What is? What is?
It's just funny. You're
it just sounds like you've had a very traumatic life.
I mean, everyone really like remember every day. It's kind of there's some we absorb so much information and we just keep forgetting everything, unless you really have to dig for it for that information. I think so. When you're kind of quoting a joke with truth, or you're quoting truth with a joke. You're making it live longer. Like the span of the joke in people's heads, that kind of will live longer.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like totally. Narrative structure, joke structure, that all sort of delivers information and helps people remember songs.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of, there was this little mini controversy around Bo Burnham's Inside. Remember?
No.
Okay, what was the controversy about that?
It was like a tiny little blip of a controversy that he did this special about being alone in a room, you know, for a year.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then, but the actual reality was that he had a girlfriend or a fiance or something and like, you know, didn't live in that room, lived with her and had like this whole sort of full life that was not represented by the special. The special was representing being alone in a room for a year. I didn't think that mattered at all, but there was a fairly large group of people that were like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, no, this isn't true. I was like, no, it's a movie. You know, it's like he's, and that's maybe what emotionally true means to me. Cause like what he was expressing through that was very real. And I'm sure he did feel those things and the thoughts that he was having, even if he was, you know, living with a fiance and a dog and all that and not alone in a room.
Yeah, yeah.
And people were able to relate to those feelings and the emotional reality. And it didn't really matter that he had this other life, you know, not represented in the special.
Yeah, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't matter if it's
true. Doesn't matter to me at all.
Because he's an artist at the end of the day, and what he's delivering is reality through art. So it doesn't have to be 100% realistic.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, didn't he actually say, like, I have spent a year, like, in a serious kind of tone? Because that special was kind of like, okay, it's a special, but at the same time, it's a comedy special 100%, but it's he's alone. And it's kind of like, I don't know. I remember he mentioned it either maybe in the beginning of the show, like in the special.
I think the introduction.
Yeah. The introduction. He could have phrased it differently where like, I did, these are the feelings that you get or whatever, like you go through it. Like it doesn't have to specify, I spent an entire year alone in this studio or whatever.
I think, I don't know, I think it would suffer if he was like, by the way, this is a metaphor.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, I think,
sure.
Yeah.
And I think also it's the same thing for, as long as you connect with the art, then it's okay. But you might not connect with the art. Like they have that expression, like separate the art from the artist.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's artists who did horrible things. And
Michael Jackson.
Like Michael Jackson. Yeah.
Yes.
Or like Bill Cosby or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you people will say, can you separate the art from the artist?
Mm.
I think for myself, it's completely based on how much I love the art.
The artist is.
Yes, how hot the victims were. No, no. That like if I react to a Michael Jackson song, I don't really have. It's very hard to have control over that. If I hear a beat and I'm just like, "Fuck, this is a dope beat," I can think about maybe like the possibility of stuff he did as much as I want with my brain, but my heart is still dancing to the beat.
Yep.
Whereas there's some people like if I watch Bill Cosby's special and he's talking like I liked Bill Cosby when before I knew about all the shit.
Yeah.
But if I watch him now, I mean, I do, my brain is going into a place where I'm like, yeah, fuck all the shit he did. And I can't really laugh at the jokes anymore because of who he is. So I don't have control over, I don't separate the art from the artist with Bill Cosby. So I don't have control over that. So with Bo Burnham, like if I liked it, then I just liked it and I don't have really control as much as you would think, I guess.
What happened with Bo Burnham, I think it's because of the fan base, they felt like you betrayed us.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit like it felt so real that even I thought it was totally... I was very surprised when I found out that he like had a fiance and was living in some house with her and all that. Mm.
he can be in a relationship.
Maybe, yeah, he's taken... Felt so betrayed. And I adjusted pretty quickly to, oh, okay, well, he made art, you know.
And I think also for that specific special, it's like I was impressed by the like how much of a director he was. Mm. I wasn't laughing as much as I was like, wow, this is a really well-made film.
I was crying.
Yeah, good production.
So right now when this is the first time I'm hearing that he wasn't, it's even more impressive because it really seemed like he was bummed out, which he could have been,
and
of course.
He's had panic attacks, anxiety attacks. He's been depressed. Like he's experienced all of those things.
Yeah, right.
It's just that he wasn't experiencing them alone in a room over the course of this.
But he did. Yeah, he did a great job with it directorially, I guess. So,
except when he was in that room, he probably did feel those ways. Yeah, so
right.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
You got something else on your magical sheet of paper, or
that's mostly it.
Padre, that's mostly it.
All right, guys. See,
that's pretty much.
I think that's my
fuck,
time.
You know? Maybe fuck Powder, one fact about yourself that is not you were from Syria.
One fact about myself?
Yeah.
Jeez, that's a tough thing to say.
An interesting fact, or like
doesn't have to be interesting. Any fact.
Any fact.
Don't listen to him. Don't do it, Badr. It's a trap.
Where do I go with this? I have
8 falcons. 7 falcons. 6 falcons.
Diarrhea.
I'm counting down when this podcast will end. 5 falcons.
5. That's when I have to come up with a fact. I am a guy.
That's totally true.
I think that's... yeah.
Okay.
3
wow.
falcons, 2 falcons, and 1 falcon.
I think I said
and
you have to fail there. Great app.
Yeah, fun
Thank
times.
You so much, Potter. We'll have you on again sometime
Thank
and
you
learn
guys.
More about you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's I figured that you'd be good with the topic because of the truth in your comedy and whatnot. So good. Great. Good job.
Nice.
Well done.
Thank you, Potter.
This is the weirdest ending ever.
Bye. Thank you for having me, guys.
Follow Potter on Instagram at...
No, don't follow me. I don't want to...
follow him.
Do not...
He's
no
got
one
a lot of trauma.
Me.
He's very paranoid.
Don't, watch him live.
If you see me on the streets, please do not even...
Don't
I don't
look
sell
at him.
Kebab, guys.
Right.
I don't work there.
Fuck. If you don't look recognized, have you thought about like wearing a burqa or...
No, that's too stereotypical.
Whoa. All right, well, we did it.
He got me back. All right. All right. Thanks, Badr.
Thanks, Badr.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. Oh, right. Yeah.
Perfect.
That's my laundry.